This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. Yes, I know, Nick. Jenna Wolf, Nick Wright, Brandon Marshall, Kevin Wilds, and has been the case all season. As Tom Brady goes, so does Nick's mood. Nick is in a fabulous mood this morning.
Jenna, I know I said Friday it was going to be maybe the best show we've ever done. That was true Friday. Today's now going to trump that. Today might be the best show we've ever done.
Let's dive in. Let's get to it. A little Monday night football from last night. 6-3 Rams, 7-3 Bucks. No. A battle for NFC playoff positioning and a battle all night for Tom Brady. 216 yards and two touchdowns, but also two costly interceptions.
Show me the double.
Including one on Tampa's final drive, sealing the win for the Rams. So the loss drops Tampa to 7-4. What does that mean? Well, they are now two losses back of the Saints in the NFC South. After the game, a seemingly level-headed Tom Brady on what went wrong.
Oh. You know, tonight was very inefficient, did not a very good job there in the second half. Defense played great. Kept coming up with huge stops, getting us the ball back. And offensively, we just couldn't make the plays that were necessary to be efficient. And we had plenty of chances. So got to get them fixed.
All right, Nick, here we go. You're up. What went wrong last night? Another primetime loss for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What happened last night?
Well, listen, we know what the Bucs are. They can't deal with pressure on the quarterback. I don't mean pressure in like the ephemeral sense, like actual human beings trying to hit the quarterback. They fall apart when that happens. So when you play the Panthers, who have no pass rush, you look great. When you play the Raiders, who as good as they are on offense, have no pass rush, you can look really good. But if you face any type of resistance from an opposing team's defensive line, you're going to fall apart. And listen, that's going to be the narrative on the Bucs today, on this channel, on all the channels, on all the shows. So I want to throw a little curveball at America. I just want to defend the Bucs and Tom Brady just a bit. 7-4 is not a bad record. Now, it's not as good as a team like the Browns, who are 7-3, but it's one less loss than the Bears. So, like, it's not 7-4 is not a terrible place to be. And Tom Brady last night, I thought, was a bit of an innovator trying to push the boundaries as far as, let me see quite how far the refs will let me take this. He saw early in the game, they're going to create defensive pass interference out of nowhere. He saw later in the game, they're going to totally change the fumble rules, which they changed for me. They're going to change them again back to how they once were. So I'm going to try to invent a double pass and see if I can get away with it. And you know what? If it wasn't for those rascally kids, I think he would have gotten away with it. He damn near did. So everyone's going to bang on Brady because he looked like an old man. And 24 hours after we saw the future GOAT lead his team down the field like clockwork, Brady just needed to get in field goal range and threw a terrible pick. And now he has 9 on the season. And that's more than, you know, Daniel Jones and Phillip Rivers. And it ain't great. But, hey, they're 7-4. They're going to make the playoffs for the first time in forever for the team. And if they play a team, Brandon, who doesn't have a pass rush, they might have a fighting chance in that playoff game. So I don't think it's all gone for the Bucs. They are what they were always going to be, a decent team with a limited quarterback.
So, Nick, watching this game, man, it was a miserable night for me. miserable.
Oh, I
because I've been standing on the table arguing you down about how Tom Brady is the GOAT and he's the best ever and he's still playing lights out. But the reality is, Tom Brady lost that game last night. And then you go back to his press conference last night after the game. That's something I do not want to hear in that locker room. One of the things that I was always taught was when you win, you deflect praise. And when you lose, you take on all the blame, especially when you're the face of the franchise, especially when you're the GOAT, especially when you're Tom Brady, Super Bowl MVP, Super Bowl champion. You've done it over and over and over again. That's the last thing I want to hear is we. No, it wasn't we. And I hate to say it this way, but it was you. Tom Brady played bad last night. The defense played good. Offensively, you go through the first pick, and I'm always going to be a guy that asks the question why before I jump down somebody's throat. The first pick, Godwin throws up his hand. So I'm going to chop that up to just Godwin. Like, that's when you see a wide receiver throw up his hand, and that means he's converting. I thought this was a bad decision by Godwin. A lot of times when you do this, the quarterback has to hold the ball. Okay. He's going to be indecisive, and bad things happen. But before he even threw up his hand, why are you even throwing this ball? You have pressure in your face. There's no reason to throw this ball. You see someone staring down the barrel of your gun, and you let the ball go. No, you don't do that. To me, that was a bad decision on Tom Brady to even let this thing rip. The second INT. Oh, man, come on.
It's
like,
terrible.
It's terrible. That's a bad decision. You don't even see you won't even see a rookie quarterback. Tua won't even make this throw in this moment. This is a seam. The ball is meant to be thrown on a dart. 18 yards on the top of the numbers, and he throws it like it's a go route. Of course, bad things are going to happen. He misread the coverage. He floats the ball in the air in the most critical point of the entire game. Bad decision. He also, coming into this game, he couldn't hit the deep ball. You have Gronkowski running down the sideline. You miss Gronkowski. You didn't even give him an opportunity. You have Mike Evans. He beats the best corner in football, Jalen Ramsey. You live for these moments, and you throw it out of bounds. Tom Brady played bad. You know, I'm starting to rethink my love for Tampa Bay and Tom Brady right now. That was just bad. That was bad.
Brandon, that was too quick.
You can't move around like this.
Go ahead, Wilds.
Stay seated, right, and stay with your Tom Brady love. Now I've got to do it for you.
Take those heels in.
And my opinion is invalidated because of my Patriots love. Look, did the Rams play last night? Did Tom Brady go against the team from Varsity Blues or the team with LL Cool J and Jamie Foxx, or was it the best defense? I think it was the best defense in the NFL, and I think we have some interesting analysis, post-game analysis. If we could roll the sound, please, Katana.
What they have, 250? Huh? Best defense in the league!
Surprise, best defense in the league. Second in points, first in yards, second in pass yards, fifth in rush yards. And I know we want to bang on Brady. He's too old. He's got a noodle arm. In the last two games, who else threw two interceptions and about 200-something yards? Russell Wilson. And we weren't like, let's be done with Russell Wilson. He's too old. He's 30-something. The fact that Tom Brady is old and threw two interceptions doesn't mean he threw the interceptions because he was old. The Rams defense is the best in the league.
No, he threw them because he was scared.
And if you...
Wilds. He didn't throw him because he was old. He threw him because he was scared.
That's fine.
He can't deal with pass rush. And what you saw in the final. Listen, they just needed a field goal. They had second and 10 with a minute 50 and a timeout. They needed to get 30 yards. But what happened? A.Q. Shipley, their center, went out of the game, and Brady preemptively saw a pass rush that wasn't there and threw the game away. That's what happened.
This is where I disagree with you. We can continue to double down on that narrative that the pass rush. No, they had an excellent game plan last night. Last night game plan was we're going to throw wide receiver quick screens. We're not going to even let the rush get to me. I thought they had an actually decent simple game plan last night to beat the Rams. They wanted to run the ball, and they wanted to take some shots. They weren't able to get that done. This is the type of game you want to have against your number one defense. But it had nothing to do with the pass rush. Those were just bad decisions. These are things that Tom Brady was able to control. That pick to end the game, that's all on him. He misread coverage. That is fundamentals. That's a seam route down the right side of the numbers. He's supposed to put that on the line. He didn't do that. And then missing those deep balls, that's on Tom Brady. Tom Brady just made some bad decisions in the worst moments of that game.
Yeah, and he added a bad decision after the game, snubbing Goff for another handshake.
All right, we're going to have to get to that in a little bit. Take a turn. Got to talk some Cowboys now because that's the video we're seeing. Why is Ezekiel Elliott content with where his disappointing 3-7 Cowboys are right now? We'll head to Dallas next. First things first.
Hey, First Things First listeners. I wanted to tell you about our brand new Fox Sports app and website, foxsports.com, reimagined for the modern sports fan. Go ahead. Download the new app right now. You don't even have to pause this episode. Every day on the new app and website, you'll see the top stories in sports, plus a rich world of written content, videos, social media, and analytics to give you a 360-degree view of the most important stories of the day. Streaming live TV has never been so easy or elegant. Every Fox Sports game, including all pregame and postgame shows, as well as the televised version of this show, just a click away. For the extra invested fan, we also go deep with real-time wagering lines, trending prop bets, win probability, and key player projections. So download the new Fox Sports app or visit www.foxsports.com.
We gotta head to Dallas now. 3-7, it is safe to say the Cowboys have woefully underperformed this season. Also safe to say, that sentence is woefully understated. This team's bad. But they are coming off a win over the Vikings, and they do get Andy Dalton back, and they had Andy Dalton back last week, and so there is light at the end of this tunnel for Ezekiel Elliott.
We knew we've been in it. We never thought that we were out of it. We know our division is struggling this year, and you know, we're right there where we need to be. We're right there to go win a division, and like I said, we gotta build on the success, so we can't come out on a short weekend and take a step back, especially against a division opponent. We gotta make sure we build on the success and keep getting better.
I'm sorry, I'm just gonna say it. I have bangs. There's no way he doesn't see that the bangs are in his face. There's no way he's like, no one will notice these. It's part of the look. I'm sorry. It's annoying. Somehow, Cowboys are just a half game back of Philly in the NFC East with a big showdown. They got Washington coming up on Thanksgiving. That's on Fox. Brandon, is it starting to look like the Cowboys could, dare I say, win the NFC East, win this division?
Yeah, I mean, come on, this is hysterical. Really, we're in good position right now? Is that what we're talking about in the NFC East? But I guess, I mean, if you look at the remaining schedule, they have one team on their schedule down the stretch with four or more wins. So I guess they have a chance, and I guess they're in the perfect position. Because you got the Philadelphia Eagles, when you look at strength of schedule, for the remaining of the season, they have the 28th easiest, and then you have the Giants 22nd, and then the Washington football team, 18. So when you look at the Cowboys, they're second. Of course, they have a chance and they're in a good position, but I don't think this is something that we should be celebrating. I don't think this is something that we should even be talking about. We should have our head down and just working, Kevin, just to get better. They are trending in a really good direction right now. But they need to stop talking and do more working.
Yeah, I'm still going for the Giants here. More so because I don't think any of these teams are really good and going to make any noise. But at least Joe Judge seems like he's building something more so than Mike McCarthy. And don't get me wrong, I love Mike McCarthy's like post-game antics, I guess. But one win is not momentum. The Giants, meanwhile, haven't lost a game in 3 weeks. Granted, one of those weeks was a bye, but it still counts. Nick, their schedule is brutal, though. Upcoming at Cincinnati, a Joe Burrow-less Cincinnati. So I'm going to count that as a win. So that'll be 4 weeks without losing, a full month without losing. Then it's Seattle, Arizona, Cleveland, and at Baltimore. Those might could really be four straight losses. Then you got Dallas to end the season. So I'm still a Joe Judge guy. And quick announcement, if the Patriots get mathematically eliminated, just like, you know, a presidential candidate, I will be throwing my support behind Joe Judge and the Giants. Little teaser there. Although the Patriots may not be.
But Nick, I got a question for you, Nick. Like, is this what Cowboys fans should be rooting for to win this division? I mean, would Cowboys fans be better served rooting to win the division or rooting for a top three draft pick at the end of this season?
Yeah, the best thing for the Cowboys would be to lose all the rest of their games. The idea that you're going to get any credit, build any momentum, winning this division when Dak is not even going to be a part of it. If Dak was there, then you could make the argument. Get Dak more playoff experience. Try to end the year on a high note. This year is lost, and what we have learned this year, and I've learned the hard way after picking and betting on the Cowboys to make the Super Bowl, this roster is incredibly flawed. So the best case scenario for the Cowboys is as follows. They end up with a top five draft pick. Someone falls in love with a quarterback in this draft. My guess is Lawrence and Fields are going to go 1 and 2 to the Jets and to the Jags. And so someone falls in love with the third guy available in this draft, and there's arguments about who that would be. And the Cowboys can trade down and add extra assets. They need a lot of help on defense, Brandon. They all of a sudden need help on the offensive line. One first-round pick is not going to go far enough for them. So I think if they are in position to draft a quarterback, they won't. But if they could get the highest pick possible, trade the pick similar to what the Colts did. When the Colts could have drafted Sam Darnold, instead they trade from 3 to 6, add 3 second-round picks, and helped build that team that right now, you know, some people look at as a fringe contender. That's the best-case scenario for the Cowboys.
Sure.
Nick, and that's why you should probably run a team. But the reality is... We don't think really logically when September hits. Ownership, general managers, and then also definitely players. Like, we really think that, you know, if we get in, we could possibly make a run at it. Every team right now that's still in the hunt still believe they can make it to the Super Bowl. There isn't one team out there that's saying, oh, you know, if we get in, yeah, we're going to be one and done. So that is the challenge when you talk about, you know, what the fans' perspective is and then also what the players, the coaches' perspective is. These guys really want to get in because they think if they get in, we can fix a few issues. We could potentially make a run at it. And that's just that's the weirdest thing about being a player and a coach in the National Football League.
All right, time for a little drawing a blank. Speaking of the Cowboys, Mike McCarthy has been looking for ways to motivate his Cowboys, and clearly all options are on the table. For example, this one. McCarthy pulled out a sledgehammer ahead of Sunday's game, started smashing watermelons a la Gallagher, if anyone remembers who that was and why he did it all in an effort to get his team fired up. And it worked. They won, right? They beat the Vikings. Also, watermelon, great source of hydration, but very high in sugar. Brandon, coach smashing watermelons before their win over the Vikings is blank.
I love it. And obviously it worked. It reminds me of my time with the Miami Dolphins, Tony Sperano, where we started out the season 0-6.
The axe?
No, not that one. We walk into the team meeting room. He said, everybody outside. We all go outside, sunny South Florida, 89 degrees. He walks out to the 50-yard line, off to the sideline. He starts digging a hole. He takes the ball. He throws it in there. He said, that is our season. Now we're moving forward. We go off, and we win the next game. So maybe Adam Gase and the Jets would do something like this, because when coaches do things like this, the team just loves it, and they rally behind them. I love it.
It's interesting.
Wilds, this is why I could never... Well, there's a lot of reasons. Okay, more on this later. More takes later.
Got to hit the NBA now. Talk some Sixers. It appears the narrative surrounding Embiid and Simmons has changed now that the management in Philly has changed. We'll tell you why next. First things first.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Dan Campbell, who had the app.
Back here with Chris Broussard. Broussard, I'd love to sit and chat, but we got to run the fast break. Here we go. We're going to start up in Boston, where Jason Tatum and the Celtics agreed to a five-year extension worth up to $195 million. I'd like that extension. Big money for the 22-year-old coming off his best season to date. But Broussard, is Tatum good enough to be the centerpiece of a championship-caliber team?
This Supermax deal is undoubtedly warranted despite the constant disrespect Jason Tatum gets in Nick Wright's tears, all right? Jason Tatum is one of the best players in the world, period, the end. And no, brace yourselves, you might fall out of your chair. He's only 22 years old. 22 yep. years old. He can score off the bounce. He can finish at the rim. He's a 40% career three-point shooter. He's high character, solid defender, great guy to build around. Now, the question, can he be the best player on a championship team? Let's keep it real.
No.
There are only four guys in the league who have proven they can be right. that. LeBron, KD, Kawhi Leonard, and Steph. He's obviously not LeBron or KD. He's not as transcendent as Steph. But I do think he can get to a Kawhi Leonard level. And he's got intangibles, like playing every night, that Kawhi doesn't have. So this is a great move. I think he's will be one of the top eight players in the league for a long time coming.
Okay, well, right now he's not one of the top 12 players in the league, so he's got to get there first. But listen, of course you give him this deal. Just like, of course, you give Donovan Mitchell this deal, even though you know if either one of these guys is my best player, I can't win the title. The Celtics are stuck. Celtic fans love sending me the video last year of when I called last season a disaster. But I was right. Last offseason a disaster. And this offseason was even worse. You lose Gordon Hayward for nothing. I do like them adding Tristan Thompson, but they're stuck. The rest of the East that matters got better. The Sixers got better. The Bucks got better. The Nets obviously got massively better. The Heat, who you couldn't beat last year, at least stayed the same. And the Celtics been going in reverse. They took LeBron to a Game 7 of the Conference Finals 3 years ago. The next year, they don't get out of Round 2. Last year, they're lucky to get out of Round 2, have a golden opportunity to make the NBA Finals, and they can't beat Miami. And in the last 30 years, we have two champions that didn't have a league MVP on their roster. The 04 Pistons, one of Wild's all-time favorites, and the 2018 Raptors. So unless you think Jason Tatum's going to be a league MVP, the answer is he's a really, really good player that can't be the number one on a champion. That's fine, but that's not what the Celtics signed up for when they thought they had the greatest haul of draft picks ever. Okay, Broussard, I'll make a 15-year wager with you. I'll take under 0.5 on career MVPs for Jason Tatum. We can revisit this in 2035. Go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, CB, this is a trick question.
Is Jason Tatum a good enough player to build a championship caliber team around? So that means you are the focal point. That means you're going to lead the team. And I think the answer is no, because now we're thrusting him into the conversation of being next to LeBron James, Steph Curry, KD, Kawhi Leonard. You can eat James Harden, Embiid. No, he's not that type of player. So, yes, is he worth the money? Absolutely. He's 22, huge upside, can do it all. But at the end of the day, he's a really good player. He's a championship player, but he isn't the player. So for that reason, I don't think you built the team around him. He needs other superstars that can help lead the way.
Okay. For the record, everybody needs other superstars. LeBron needs other superstars. The question we should be asking is, can Jason Tatum be as good as Paul Pierce, who won a Finals MVP? And the answer is yes. Of course he can. And of course you give him this deal. Who was the best player on that team?
Excellent point, Wilds.
Garnett?
Kevin Garnett, without any shadow of a doubt.
Kevin Garnett was not better than Paul Pierce that year. He can be Paul Pierce. You surround him with two other pieces, just like every team's blueprint to win, and they can win a championship. The idea that there's only four guys in the history of the world that can win championships, that's not right. Of course he needs other pieces. The real question is, like, can Jaylen Brown, that's the more interesting, can Jaylen Brown be like a second or third piece?
Time?
Is Kemba the second piece?
So when is his time?
When is his
time?
I don't know, any time in the next 15 years.
He's 22 years old. Giannis has to prove that he can lead a team to a championship.
He just was able to go into a bar.
I'm glad we're on the same page. We got to move on to Philly now. New Sixers GM Daryl Morey dispelled some of the trade rumors that have involved Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. Morey said, quote, "We have got to get rid of that noise. We are building around them." So, Broussard, should Sixers fans still believe Embiid and Simmons can coexist?
Yeah, look, and I've been hearing for weeks that this is what Philadelphia is going to do. They are committed to seeing how their two stars work with Doc Rivers. I get it. I think it's a smart move. I've been saying they should do that for a year or so. However, one of the guys I would trade Simmons for would be James Harden. Now, if they want to wait, give it to the trade deadline or even give them a full season, I'm fine with that. I like what they've built around these two. But for James Harden, I'd seriously think about it, but I like what they're doing in Philly. I want to see them under Doc Rivers. I want to see him put Joel Embiid in the post and those three shooters around him plus Ben Simmons. Yep. Doc's got to coach this almost like an old school team with Embiid, and I think they can have success.
Apologies to everyone on the show in America. I'm going to be a little off the rest of this segment because I'm still shaken to my core over Wilds unveiling the take that in 2008, Paul Pierce was better than Kevin Garnett. I've never heard that take. I didn't know that take existed in the Wild. I'm still wrapping my brain around.
He won Finals MVP.
On this one.
That's why you don't have a vote.
I mean, listen, Kevin Garnett did finish third in the league MVP that year.
Let me answer this. Go ahead, Nick.
So I totally agree with Broussard that if you could trade Ben Simmons for James Harden, I think Daryl would do it, and I think the Sixers would be better. If that trade, that specific one trade, does not materialize, I think Daryl and Doc believe they can make the finals with this roster. The on-court, off-court numbers of Simmons and Embiid together with great shooting around them a couple years ago was extraordinary. Daryl, in all his press avails, has mentioned that. So I think they are building a team they think can win right now. But I also think they would move Simmons for Harden. But I think that's the only way they move one of these two guys this year, Brandon.
Yeah, I agree with you. Look, when plan A doesn't work out and you can't get James Harden, you're absolutely supposed to say this. Great job by Morey. You got to have those guys believing in you. So for you to stand up and say this, it bodes well in the locker room. Yeah, and absolutely these guys can coexist. You take out J.J. Redick a couple years ago. This team hasn't been the same. Now you input Seth Curry and Danny Green. This team, they still have to go through Brooklyn, but this is a really good team. If they can build the chemistry, if leadership can stand up, which you have Doc Rivers now, they could be really good next year.
Okay, I hate when everyone else does this on the show and just backtracks to the previous question, but I have to. There's one Finals MVP award, and Paul Pierce won it. I think Kevin Garnett did. Paul Pierce won the NBA Finals award. The only curious thing here is if this Harden trade does materialize, does Daryl Morey's sort of backing of this tandem end up biting him a little bit, like we're building around Blake Griffin, next thing you know, Blake Griffin's in Detroit. If the Harden all of a sudden is like, I want out and I definitely want to go to Philly, make it happen, does Daryl really putting a stake in the ground like this is our team, does that somehow like hurt his, not his credibility, but it's just he's really out there authoritatively saying it? You don't think so, Broussard, at all?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's happened many times before, no. As long as the team will end up being better with James Harden, no.
Yeah.
All right, let's head out west. We're actually going to head out west. The Clippers making a splash, signing NBA champ Serge Ibaka to a two-year, $19 million deal. Ibaka will help fill the voids left by big men Montrezl Harrell and Jamichael Green. But, Nick, I'd imagine you still don't think Clippers have done enough this offseason to keep pace with the Lakers? I'm asking for a friend.
No. The Clippers have to have, they have to have more left. There has to be another move coming. They lose Montrezl Harrell, who, while had a terrible bubble, was incredibly valuable for them throughout the regular season. I like Serge Ibaka a lot. I think that is an excellent addition. But that is not enough of an upgrade, if it is an upgrade at all, to deal with the serious flaws of this team. And they still don't have a point guard. I understand Kawhi didn't want Harrell there, so the Clippers didn't offer Harrell a contract. That's fine. Kawhi runs the show. But they've got to have another move coming, Broussard. It doesn't make sense to me that they are done because they are not good enough. And one other thing, just quickly, Broussard, shout out to Andre Iguodala, who evidently was the best player on the 2015 Warriors because he won that Finals
like
MVP.
That.
I didn't know those were the rules. Go ahead, Broussard. Sorry. Go ahead.
Look, I love the Serge Ibaka move. All right, that saved the Clippers this offseason because they were getting smacked around by the Lakers for these past week or so.
Looked
so
like
that was
Nuggets
a great
series.
Move. He'll help their rim protection. He's a guy that can space the floor. He's a good three-point shooter. Tough. He gets along with Kawhi. We know that from Toronto. Great move. And I also like Luke Kennard. He has to stay healthy.
Yep.
But when he's healthy, he had a nice season in Detroit last year. That's an upgrade over Landry Shamet, I believe. But you're right. They need a point guard. I don't know if they can get it. But they need a point guard, and they need a leader. Kawhi, as great as he is not a leader. They need leadership and a point guard. Until they get that, they will be behind the Lakers.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think Ty Lue is enough. And sometimes your answers are right in that locker room. Before last season, everybody was high on the Clippers. Everybody thought it was going to come down to the Lakers and the Clippers. So look, they got Montrez out of there. He was the chemistry issue. So he's out of there. You gotta believe that PG is going to actually contribute next year. And those two, Kawhi and PG, being effective and efficient, they're as good as any other tandem. So I honestly believe that they have everything they need to get the job done next year. You don't always have to make a splash. This is one of those teams that don't need to do that. Also, the Sixers is another team that don't need a huge splash. So I think they can get it done next year.
The no splash Clippers. All right, take a turn, head back to football. Last night's Rams-Bucks game, not Brady's best. He now has 5 interceptions and 5 touchdowns in his last 3 games. Talking Tom Brady on the other side, first things first. Back here with Chris Broussard talking Lakers now. One of their key rotational pieces, Markieff Morris, re-signed on Monday. Morris played a big role in the bubble for the Lakers, shooting 42% from three-point range for the NBA champs. Just one of a number of moves Rob Pelinka has made, adding Marc Gasol, Dennis Schroeder, Montrezl Harrell, Wes Matthews, now bringing back Morris and KCP. So, Broussard, is there any reason to doubt a Lakers repeat after their bevy of offseason moves?
No, look, I've been saying even before all these moves, I was saying they'll be better. Simply because Anthony Davis, with the confidence from winning a championship, is going to be much better next season, okay? So assuming LeBron doesn't fall off by more than a fraction at age 36, they're going to be better. And they already had the best duo in the league. Now, and the question last year was, do they have the depth or supporting cast around them? Now they've improved their supporting cast and their depth. They got the two top six men in the league in Dennis Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell. Mark Gasol is a great defender, still
great
a very
addition.
Good defender, even
it's
at his advanced
addition.
Age, and can spread the floor and shoot the three. The only thing they lost is some athleticism at the rim in Dwight and JaVale McGee. But again, Gasol and the others they've added, Montrezl Harrell, they'll be able to make up for that. They got better. And right now, they have got to be the favorites. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
They're the massive favorites. Let me talk about Montrezl for a moment.
Ooh.
Because Montrezl was asked to be the third most important player on the Clippers. He thrived in that role in the regular season. During the bubble, he gets there late. The loss of his grandmother clearly weighed on him. He was not good in the bubble, and it cost him a lot of money. But he is being asked to be the fifth most important Laker. That's first of all. Second of all, his biggest weakness gets covered up by Anthony Davis. The reason he was a tough guy to play down the stretch of games as your five is because the Clippers had no rim protection, and he doesn't provide it. If he's on the court with Anthony Davis, that is taken care of. So he will be better with the Lakers than he was with the Clippers. And can we show the Phil Handy tweet? Because this is the problem for the Phil Handy Instagram. This is the problem for the rest of the league. Kyle Kuzma might be the Lakers' 10th man next year. Caruso, Markieff Morris, your 9th and 8th men probably. And that's the depth chart now. Jared Dudley just missed the cut. Talen Horton-Tucker as well. Here's the problem, Wilds. The rule in the NBA is this. If you're going to beat a LeBron James team, you have to annihilate them when he goes to the bench. If LeBron's teams can just play you even in the 10 minutes or so he sits, you cannot beat them. And now with the additions of Schroeder and Harrell, I also think Wesley Matthews will duplicate what Danny Green gave you last year. They lost Avery Bradley, but they didn't have Avery Bradley in the bubble. And I think Mark Gasol is an awesome addition. The Lakers are going to be fine when LeBron rests. And if you're fine when LeBron rests, then you lose because you're going to get beat when LeBron is on the court if you're the opposition. So, yeah, I think they are. I will take the Lakers. You can have the other 29 teams in the league. The Lakers are the favorites over. They're not just the favorites. They're the favorites over the field. There's no question about it.
I feel like in the meeting of like all of the GMs, Pelinka comes out way up on top, and assistant GM Rich Paul. Real quick, hey, Warriors, we got Wiseman and Lost Clay. Nope, you're not as good. Timberwolves got Anthony Edwards, and Rubio's back. I guess so. Pelicans got Bledsoe and Steven Adams, but Zion's the longest tenured Pelican. Kings got nobody. Spurs lost Bellinelli. The Suns got Chris Paul. That's good. Maybe the Suns make some noise, but we don't really think they're contending with the Lakers. The Grizzlies got Hezonja, but still too young. Blazers got Cantor and Covington, I guess, but last time I rooted for the Blazers, me and Broussard threw me under the bus. The Mavs got Josh Richardson. Ooh, Nick, maybe Dallas will do something. The Jazz got some draft picks and Derek Favors. OKC got Horford and a bunch of draft picks. The Rockets got Boogie. We don't know how good he's going to be. Maybe he'll be able to stop it. Denver got RJ Hampton. The Clips got Ibaka. And the Lakers got four great players. So, Brandon, to me, if there's going to be a challenge for LeBron, it's got to come out of the East because the West is making little moves. But when I'm trying to make a case for an injured Boogie and the Phoenix Suns, who haven't had a winning season since I was in high school, I don't know if that's true or not, but it certainly feels like it. It feels like the Lakers just keep on getting better.
Yeah, absolutely. But You know, I think it's really interesting to see everybody sit back and watch the Lakers try to get better. Like, this team just won the championship, and they're the most aggressive team in the NBA. Like, what is That's everybody right. else doing? Well, yeah, you highlighted everyone. Great job. But why are you guys doing that? Why are you sitting back? This is the time to actually try to get things done. And then you got the Lakers being the most aggressive team. Before the start of the business league, the new year, the new league year started, I felt like the field had the best opportunity, and I wasn't leaning towards the Lakers. Now I'm starting to trend towards the Lakers. But I have to say there's a big question mark around this Montrezl guy. Like, you guys are just going to ignore the fact that Montrezl Harrell single-handedly brought down the Clippers' locker room. Are we going to ignore that? This whole six-man thing, he just took it way too far. He actually thought he was better than PG. He actually thought he was better than Kawhi. That was part of the issue, chemistry and continuity. So is he going to be able to come into the Lakers locker room, Nick, and be that fifth, sixth option? I don't know. I don't know if he's that guy. I think he really believes he's the sixth man. He's going to try to do it again, and that could cause friction. So I don't want to ignore that. Yeah, they got better. But can they bring it all together from a chemistry and continuity standpoint is the biggest question.
I would be more concerned about that, Brandon, if he were traded to the Lakers as opposed to choosing to go there, knowing LeBron and Anthony Davis are already on the team and knowing where he's going to be in the hierarchy. And Broussard, I think Wilds brings up a really interesting point, which is the teams in the West that got better are not contenders. And the actual contenders, I call the Clippers a push. You lose Montrez, but you trade out Shamet for Kennard, but you bring back Marcus and Morris, and you bring in Ibaka. Call that a push. The Nuggets lost Jeremy Grant. Now, I don't know why Jeremy Grant wants $60 million from Detroit instead of $60 million from Denver, but he did. That is a major loss for them. The Warriors, unfortunately, because of Klay, they stay in the non-contender category. Yeah, I think the Blazers got better. They're not contenders. And so the only cream of the crop Western Conference team that had a good offseason is the team that could have run it back and probably won the title anyway. So I think the Lakers are massive favorites in the West and significant favorites over whoever comes out of the East. Barring, if Harden goes to the Nets, which I don't think he will, we can reevaluate, but as presently constituted.
Well, let me first address Brandon's question about Montrezl Harrell with the Lakers. The problem with the Clippers was they had no leadership. As great as Kawhi Leonard is and Paul George, they are not leaders. Okay, that's one thing they're looking for still. You Montrez in the Lakers locker room with LeBron as the leader, he's not going to cause a problem. I don't think that'll be any issue whatsoever. Now, to Nick's point, you're right. I mean, I think the Nuggets will be fine. Yeah, I would have liked to kept Jeremy Grant, but I think maybe they want to make more room for Michael Porter Jr., who obviously isn't the defender, but he's a very good offensive player.
Yeah, that's good.
The only team that had a comparable offseason and maybe better than the Lakers was the Philadelphia 76ers. And they're over in the East.
True.
And the question with them is, are their two leaders, Embiid and Simmons, mature enough? Mature, whatever you want to say, Nick. Are they mature enough to lead a team to the finals? That is the biggest question.
And the Bucks had a good one, too.
They cannot.
And the Bucks adding Holiday is a good move for them as well.
Okay,
but again, they're fighting in the East.
Pretty good.
They're fighting in the East.
Yeah,
and so
it's
just like out West. I don't know who's going to have the honor of finishing second out West. I guess we don't even know who the second best team in the West is right now.
I'd say the Clippers are
just,
the second
just
best.
It's a tough spot.
Clippers are still.
The Clippers,
man.
Right. The Clippers.
Nick wants to scrap the season, just give the title to the Lakers. Back to our top story now. Two of the top teams in the NFC playing some football last night. Rams walked away on top. Are they now serious Super Bowl contenders in the NFC? That's next. Broussard, thank you so much.
Yep.
We got to head up to Foxborough now. Wilds, earmuffs, buddy, earmuffs.
Yeah.
The Patriots are hanging on tight to their playoff hopes, but barely, real tight, because Those playoff hopes are real slim these days. On Sunday, Cam and company coming up short to a pretty bad Texans team. So what does it mean for Cam with this Pats team at 4-6? Quarterback was asked about his future. Take a listen.
Do you have interest in being a Patriot in 2021?
Man, I have interest in winning the Arizona Cardinals game. How about that? I mean, there's so many things that I mean, I don't want to even harp or dwell or even think. I think my as the Bible says, my runneth over it. You know, with just trying to focus on, you know, the near future rather than the far future.
Somebody has been spending a lot of time with Bill Belichick, the old non-answer answer, using like 100 more words. But Coach Mangini now back with us. Let me ask you this. Would it be best for these two at the end of this season to sort of go their separate ways? Is that the best thing for this team? It hasn't exactly worked out according to everyone's in New England's plan, I don't think.
I don't know if it's the best plan for them to part. And nobody was more skeptical about this working in New England than I was. I didn't even know if he'd be able to make the team and more or less or be able to start. But I've been really impressed by what Cam's done. And from what I hear, he's been an incredible teammate. He's been amazing in the building. And you hear the way that he's speaking. That's a very Patriot way of talking, where you're focused on the present and not the future. And I want to see Cam continue to do really well. They're really a couple plays away from having two more victories, and this season could look dramatically different. And I'm not counting them out down the stretch either. I think that Cam's been impressive. I think that Cam's earned an opportunity to start somewhere else if it's not New England, or he's earned an opportunity to get paid as a back as a starter as opposed to a prove-it contract that he's had in New England, and I'm happy for him for that.
Well, I love to hear all that, Coach. If people didn't watch the Patriots-Texans game, it was one of Cam's better games of the year. Threw for 350 yards, didn't turn the ball over. I know the game ended with him not being able to get the Hail Mary off on the 4th-and-4. It wouldn't have been a Hail Mary, kind of a pseudo-Hail Mary. But it was, or the final notable drive, I should say, ended like that. But Cam wasn't the reason they lost that game. They lost that game because somehow the defense this year is one of the worst defenses in the entire NFL. And Deshaun Watson did whatever he wanted to do. But, Brandon, I don't think we can answer this question yet. I think the question for Cam is, can he make it through the full season healthy? That was, I think, why there was no market for him this offseason, was because there was questions about his health. And so we need to see if he can make it through the full season healthy. I don't consider the game he missed because of COVID, a football health related issue. That's an outlier for this specific season. And then the Patriots got to see, Brandon, what their other options are. You know, a wise man once said a football team is as loyal as his options. And so what are your options? Because if the option's Hoyer or Stidham, then obviously you are smart to go back to Cam Newton. There's not going to be a bounty of free agent quarterbacks available. Like, Jameis might be available, but I'd rather have Cam than Jameis if he stays healthy. And we don't know who they're going to be in the draft. So I think it really depends on how the final 6 weeks go, if Cam stays healthy, and how much Cam has enjoyed his time in New England on his end.
Yeah, I mean, first off, I think Cam answered the question brilliantly. That's what you're supposed to do. You know, you're supposed to deflect that. Don't create any distractions. So he did a great job there. But if I'm Cam, Nick, I'm focused on this next game, and I'm focused on finishing strong. Because if I finish strong these last 6 weeks, now I have all the leverage. I can go to another team and become a starter, or I can stay here. But the Patriots need Cam more than Cam needs the Patriots. Because what are the options? What are the options in free agency? What are the options via trade? What are the options in a draft? Like, there really isn't a better alternative at this point that showed up. So when you look at it, again, like what you talked about, 365 yards, zero turnovers against the Houston Texans. I know it's the Houston Texans, but at the end of the day, you got to ask yourself, who was he throwing to? Bird, White, Harry, Myers, Burkhead? Mm-hmm. You know, are any of those guys on that list capable of being a number two anywhere else? I don't think so. So if I'm Cam Newton, Wilds, I finished strong these last six games, and then I sit down with Bill Belichick. I'm saying, look, man, what are we going to do next year? How are you going to get us more help? Talk to me about the tight end position. Talk to me about the wide receiver position. Cam's doing a great job of not creating distractions and not pointing a finger at anyone. I mean, he's played bad throughout the time, throughout that little, you know, recovery time with COVID-19. But for the most part, he doesn't have help. So he needs help if he wants to make this work in New England, Wilds.
Yeah, I mean, if Bill Belichick wasn't letting Tom Brady in on personnel decisions, I don't think anybody's getting in on personnel decisions. So I think if they have a meeting, I'm Bill Belichick. I say, Cam, let's run it back. You're getting better with the playbook. You've said you were learning more. And here are, drum roll, three reasons I would sign Cam Newton right now or at the end of the season. Right now is too much, but I get ahead of myself. I get enthusiastic when I talk about Cam. Number one reason, leadership. Hey, it's been an up and down season. We could have easily been like Tank and the whole thing could have fallen apart. Nope, this guy's out saying like, hey, I'm pointing thumbs. I don't point fingers. And everyone, it's hard to find a Patriot who hasn't talked about how good of a leader he is. Belichick, McDaniels, Jed Fish, Hall of Famer Julian Edelman. Great leadership. Also, on offense, besides Edelman, who's our real leader there? It's got to be Cam. Came in and filled the void left by Brady. Number two, upward trajectory. You guys said it in Texans' loss. No turnovers, 26-40, 365 yards. Brandon, you know what I always say, and I tell my kids every night, ball security is job security, yours and mine. My kids are like, what are you talking about? We don't even have jobs. I said, doesn't matter. Get it into your head, kid. Get it into your head. Job security is ball security, yours and mine. Number three, it's been a quiet rebuild. Everyone thinks it's either contend for the Super Bowl or tank, but you can kind of recover on the fly. Like if you're running a marathon, you know, you don't have to run all out. It's like, you know, take mile 15, take it down a notch. That's what the Patriots did. Reloading 2021. How much cap space do we have? 70 million. And all our guys back off the COVID list that hopefully we get a vaccine, knock on wood. Normal year, and the Patriots are ready to rebuild. Cam will have 2 years in the playbook, coach. I feel like our options are not great. Not like Dak Prescott's going to opt out. He's going to go back. So Cam's the best guy out there for us, and familiarity with the team and the leadership. I love him. I'd sign him up again.
Yeah, I don't know how much it's a function of options. The options will become clear, you know, as we move forward. And a bunch of things change. But if I'm Cam Newton, I look at Tom Brady, who got $50 million guaranteed, and I got $500,000 guaranteed. And you have to give Cam a ton of credit. There's a new O-line coach. There's a new special teams coach. A ton of guys opt out. You've got injuries. You've got so many different things. You're taking over for an absolute legend. You're coming off of an injury. There's so many things that he's done to prove his value. And if I'm in his camp, as well as the first game of the season, running the ball 17 times and putting himself at risk that way. If I'm his group or Cam Newton, you need to be compensated for what you've done and what you could potentially do. And I don't know if New England's going to be willing to do that.
All right, let's take a slight turn now. Play a little in or out. On Sunday, Dolphins head coach Brian Flores benched Tua for poor play as the Dolphins tried to claw their way back in Denver. They came up just short with Fitzy. Flores said Tua will remain the starter and that he expects the rookie to bounce back. Brandon, you in or out on Brian Flores' decision to bench Tua?
I'm out on this. I mean, you made the decision to move forward with Tua. This is that development year, or this is the year where you feel like he is going to help the team win. He gives you the best opportunity there. Look, if you're going to ride with Tua, then you need to focus on letting him ball out through the good and the bad. Because face it, the failure and the losses is where you actually learn more and you actually develop. So you actually did yourself a disservice by taking him out. The team and Tua, because that's what you want him, you know, for during this time, is to actually learn in these moments. So I feel like it was a disservice. I feel like it was the wrong call. But obviously, the boy wonder, the genius coach, Flores, he knows better than us.
Look, I'm out on it too, Jenna. Although I understand why you would make the change to try to get some kind of spark. He'd been sacked 6 times. He was slow on his reads. There are a lot of those issues. But as Nick knows, I'm a big believer in seeing guys in critical situations. And when you're having a bad day, can you dig yourself out of it? Can you dig the team out of it? And that's part of the learning curve that happens with a young quarterback. So to yank him out and then put him back in, I don't know if you're really gathering that information that you hope to get and understand where he is.
But isn't this a learning moment too? It's like, I just don't like that we treat quarterbacks differently than we treat everybody else. Like, hockey goalies get pulled all the time. Like, guess what? You don't have it today. I don't need to see you score 7 more goals to realize you don't have it. You're getting sacked and you're getting beat up. Pull him out of the game. He's not, you know, a little kid. This is part of the learning experience, Nick.
Hey, maybe, I'm just saying, maybe that transition to the NFL was not as easy as you thought it was. Coach, thank you so much. Tough night for Tom Brady. Night being the key word as the Bucs once again come up short in a primetime game. Saw what I did there. That's next. First things first. Can't waste a minute taking a shot. NFL. An NFL tradition continues on Fox as Washington takes on Zeke and the Cowboys Thanksgiving Day 4 Eastern. Only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Cannot wait. All right, back to our top story, La Monday Night Football. 6-3 Rams, 7-3 Bucks. Battle for NFC playoff positioning and a battle all night for Tom Brady. 216 yards, 2 TDs, but also 2 costly interceptions, including one on Tampa's final drive, sealing the win for the Rams. So the loss drops Tampa to 7-4. They're now 2 losses back of the Saints in the NFC South. After the game, a seemingly level-headed Tom Brady in a plaid shirt on what went wrong.
You know, tonight was very inefficient, did not a very good job there in the second half. Defense played great, kept coming up with huge stops, getting us the ball back. And offensively, we just couldn't make the plays that were necessary to be efficient. And we have plenty of chances, so got to get them fixed.
Brandon, you didn't love what you heard from Tom Brady last night. What'd you make of his press conference? What'd you make of his play in an up-and-down loss to the Rams?
Yeah, it comes down to Tom Brady and that offense. They just didn't play well. You know, when you think about the offense, the game plan, I felt like they tried to do what they needed to come out with the victory. And what that was get the ball out of his hands quick, beat the pass rush, don't let Aaron Donald hurt you. So we saw a lot of wide receiver screens. They tried to rely on the run game and play action and taking shots down the field. But this offense in this game plan, it wasn't a sophisticated one. It wasn't complicated. They really didn't challenge the Rams at all. It was methodical. You know, they didn't seem like they were in rhythm. They had a few big shots and they just couldn't connect. You know, you look at Tom Brady missing Gronkowski down the field, which is a trend, missing Mike Evans down the field. You have the best cornerback beat for a big play in the game and you miss him. You don't even give him a chance. Now, Nick, I'm actually shocked that you have been taking it easy on me all day. I've been standing on the table arguing you down that Tom Brady is the guy. But you have to think after last night that, man, you know, Tom Brady, he's going to get you in the playoffs. But can he get you to the Super Bowl? Can he win it? I don't know.
No.
Because he continues to make some bad decisions in key moments.
Listen.
Like, I don't understand the second pick. The first pick, there's something there, Nick. But, man, I don't know.
Yeah, the second pick. Yeah, listen, down 3, 2 minutes left. Timeout, decent field position. Field goal ties it, touchdown wins it. Once upon a time, Tom Brady was the best in the league in that spot. Now he throws an interception, a terrible one, to lose you the game. You know what the Bucs' game plan was? We think our defense can win us this game, and they were damn near right. As long as our quarterback doesn't make grievous errors. In the first half, their offense was drawing questionable pass interference penalties. Then in the second half, Brady fumbled in the end zone. We haven't even run that tape. I have no idea how that's not a fumble. I don't know how it's not called a fumble on the field. I certainly don't know how when they review it, it's not called a fumble. That was insane. He threw two interceptions that might as well have been punts. And don't forget, early in the game, there was another interception that could have been a punt. And the safety just dropped it. Had it near the goal line and just dropped it. Brady was terrible. And now, yesterday, Wilds, you said, oh, and he tried to invent the illegal double pass, by the way. Yesterday, you said that I call Phillip Rivers noodle arm. I don't call Phillip Rivers noodle arm. I do call Tom Brady noodle arm. And the numbers back me up. Can we show Brady on 10 air yards of 10 plus? We're not 20 plus, 25 plus, just 10 yards down the field. He's been okay in wins and horrific in the losses. And what do those losses have in common? Bears, Saints, Rams, pass rushes. And sometimes the pass rush doesn't even have to be there. He just has to know it could get there. On the game-sealing pick, his center had just gone out of the game. He knows Aaron Donald's coming. He can't wait to get rid of that football. Guys, he can't deal with a pass rush. You can't win three playoff games. You can't deal with a pass rush. You might get lucky and get a team in the first one where there's no pass rush, but eventually you're going to run into a defensive line. And we are yet to see, Wilds, the Tampa Bay Bucs offense function at any level if the other team can get to the quarterback. So, yeah, no, I'm not surprised. That's right. Brandon, I don't need to be hard on you here. You were defending the GOAT. I get it. A lot of people were. It's fine. But they are what I said they were, a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender.
That's too.
And that will remain the case.
You're going
all season.
Too far.
No, I'm not. I might not be going far enough. Too far. It might not be going far enough.
Wilds, go ahead, but he's going way too far.
Go, Wilds.
You're too far. You're too far. Look, the Buccaneers did not play the team from Varsity Blues. They played the best defense in the NFL. So, yeah, Tom Brady's lollipop interceptions looked bad, but if we can play the sound from John Johnson, here's how the Rams think of themselves.
What they have, 250? Huh? Best defense in the league!
There you go, correct.
Very, very.
That's not just like, hey, Tom Brady stinks. Tom Brady's got a noodle arm, old noodle arm, as Brandon likes to say. Look, this is a good team up there right with, there with the Colts. Second in points, first in yards, second passing yards, fifth in rushing yards. And Brandon, I know that it's time all the Tom Brady haters are mad because he wears nice plaid shirts and he's so handsome. He's got six Super Bowl rings. But mind you, he went 216, two touchdowns, two interceptions. Russ last week went for 248, zero touchdowns, two interceptions. And no one was like, oh, Russ, too old, 30-something, no longer Mr. Unstoppable, Mr. Invincible, Unstoppable, whatever, Mr. Whatever it was.
Unlimited.
What?
Unlimited.
Yeah, but the issue, Wilds, it's not about the, it's about his decision-making. That's what it comes down to. You look at the first pick. I'm going to chop it up to just them two not on the same page. Look at Godwin. He throws the hand. That's Randy Moss. That's what Randy Moss does. So you make the quarterback hold the ball, and a lot of times he's indecisive. So I don't know if this is Godwin or if it's Tom Brady. I refuse to sit here on television and blame somebody when I'm not sitting in those rooms. And I don't know if he was supposed to sit it down at 15, if he was supposed to run an end cut. That's just bad play and bad communication by those two. Now, the second interception, that's 100% on Tom Brady. You have to know that that backside safety is going to go to the middle of the field, and they absolutely know your tendencies. They know you like to throw
and
the seam route. What is the seam route versus cover two?
And
you have two options. You got Gronkowski or one of your wide receivers taking the middle of the field. If it's one high, the tight end wide receiver runs that literally runs down the top of the numbers, so they know that. The safety overplayed it because he knew exactly where you were going, and he picked the ball off. That was just a bad play. You don't throw it like that. That was all on Tom Brady. Those are things
bad
that
decisions
he can
continued
control
after the game. Jenna, I think
Speaking of bad decisions after the game, the other interesting thing that did happen last night, the old post-game handshake. Jared Goff went out to the middle of the field looking for Brady, as is the case with quarterbacks literally after every game. But Brady appeared to snub Goff with a handshake, which would make this the second time this happened this season. Remember, he did it to Foles as well. But boom, 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 Brandon, something or nothing, my friend.
Yeah. Listen, I got on Nick. Going back to Thursday night football, playing against the Chicago Bears, he wanted to make it a big deal. I'm like, it's not a big deal. You know, and maybe it is, Nick. Maybe you're right. You know, Nick Foles, you can chop that one up to, you know what? It just in the heat of the moment, in the spirit of competition,
he
snubbed him. He
didn't know what time it was, day it was, down it was.
But then last night, you have a responsibility. You have a duty in the NFL to pass the torch.
He's a poor
sport,
man.
You have a duty to go out there and tell that man Jared Goff, great job. He didn't do that. Maybe it's a thing.
And a poor sport. He wouldn't shake Eli's hands after the Super Bowl losses. He wouldn't shake Foles' hands after the Super Bowl loss. Now he won't shake Goff's hand. The last time he got asked about this, he acted offended. He was like, I shake hands with guys I have long-standing relationships with, which is why you had a long, warm embrace with Justin Herbert, who you met that day after you won. Wild. Like, listen,
Wild,
the guy's a bad
boy?
Loser. He's a bad loser.
What's up with your boy, Wilds?
You know, I've had a total 180 on this. Now I like it. If you guys are gonna bash him this much, like, you know what? You don't get a handshake. You don't get to touch the goat. You don't get to touch the goat unless you have a flawless game. So no. I was trying to be like, you know, rational about it. Like, yeah, you're right. He should tutor. No. You cannot touch the goat. No, I did not play well.
My goat is so much. Quarterbacks are gonna shake hands. Hey. You know what? I'm excited to see
what?
If Mahomes snubs him after the Chiefs roll their ass on Sunday night. I wonder if Mahomes will snub him.
That'll
be fun
show.
To see. But he probably won't.
With
because
that,
he's
we
not
are going to
sport.
Say goodbye. Undisputed coming up next. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.